The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi there, I'm Allie, and you're listening to Just Food Stories, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. If you missed the live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just Food is a nonprofit organization committed to helping people build community food projects. We know that people all over New York City know that we need to change our food system, and they want to make that change. But so often people don't even know where to start. So we'd like to take the next half hour and introduce you to some of the people who are doing that. They are taking their skills and their passions, and they are bringing change. Hopefully their stories will inspire you to create your own Just Food story. This is a big day. If anyone read the New York Times editorial supporting universal free lunch for public school students in New York City, it's huge. And I think we're on the cusp of a true paradigm shift, not only in lunch, but in food justice as a whole. And that's thanks in no small part to my guests today. So I am very, very honored and excited to be talking with Jan Poppendick, Professor Emerita of Sociology and Policy Director of the New York City Food Policy Center at Hunter College and the CUNY School of Public Health. Her primary concerns, both as a scholar and as an activist, have been poverty, hunger, and food assistance in the United States. She is author of a bunch of books. The one I'm reading right now is Breadlines, Knee Deep in Wheat, Food Assistance in the Great Depression. There's Sweet Charity, Emergency Food and the End of Entitlement, and pertinent to today's discussion, Free for All, Fixing School Food in America, which received the 2010 Book of the Year Award from the Association for the Study of Food and Sociology. Jan has written numerous articles on hunger, food assistance, public policy. Jan is a recipient of a 2011 James Beard Foundation Leadership Award and serves on the board of directors for Why Hunger, Community Food Advocates, and the advisory committees of the National Farm to School Network, School Food Focus, and Wellness in the Schools. Liz Ackles is Executive Director of Community Food Advocates and has spent her career in pursuit of social and economic justice for over 20 years at the city, state, and national levels. Liz served as the Senior Policy Analyst at the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies, where she conceptualized and built the Access to Assistance campaign. Liz also served as the National Outreach Coordinator at Lambda Legal, the nation's oldest and largest legal organization serving the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and HIV community. Liz has also served as policy analyst at the Community Food Resource Center, CFRC, and worked on welfare and food stamp policy issues on federal, state, and city levels. As a project of the CFRC, she founded the Welfare Made a Difference National Campaign, a social marketing and legislative active campaign to reframe the debate over social programs for poor families. Liz is an organizer, a coalition builder, and a lovely human being. Who has served as a trustee for a bunch of foundations, and I am out of breath. So welcome again, and I just want to be clear, I had to edit these bios, they were still very long, but these are two real forces, and I'm very honored to have you both on our little show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, congratulations on the New York Times editorial today and on building such an amazing coalition. We're going to get into school lunch and we're going to talk a lot, hopefully, in this half hour. But let's just start at a very basic level. Let's say I'm a high school freshman, Liz, and I walk into my school cafeteria. What is my experience like, and why am I not likely to eat lunch there?
So it varies from school to school and by, you know, different experiences. But as students get older, they become more aware of social stigma. And by the time students reach the high school level, even though many New York City public school students have family income that makes them eligible for free reduced price lunch, they are less likely to eat. And so the experience day to day is going into the cafeteria, getting on the line. And even though in some ways things have become more subtle with swipe cards and things like that, kids know who's getting free lunch.
What is that eligibility requirement?
So these are federal requirements. Mm-hmm. For free lunch, based on federal guidelines, it's roughly $25,000 a year for a household of three.
That's an annual income of $25,000 a year.
And 68% of New York City public school students' family income falls into that category. And for reduced price lunch, which it's about $36,000 a year, and in total, 75% of New York City public school students fall into that category.
So there are a million or so New York City public school students, and 750,000 of them are eligible for either free or reduced lunch.
Yes,
according to federal.
Exactly. And New York City last year made the wise move of eliminating, for New York City purposes, the reduced price category. So
got it. Okay.
Okay.
So I know who, if I'm that high school freshman, I know who's getting the free lunch and who's not getting the free lunch.
Well, chances are, if you're that high school freshman, that you ate the school lunch in elementary school, about 81% of students do, and that you may have continued in middle school, but middle school is where the social distinctions begin to set in, so that figure drops to 60-something. But in high schools, it drops to 38. Yep. Am I right on that? So that's a minority of the students and a minority of those who are eligible for the free and reduced price. We have 250,000 kids in New York City who are eligible for free or reduced, who are not participating, who are passing up that meal.
What are they eating if they're passing up lunch?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of them aren't eating at all. And a lot of them are getting something out of a vending machine, or they've grabbed something from the corner store on the way into school, or they are allowed out at lunchtime from many schools and go, unfortunately, not to the local health food for a healthy wrap, but more typically a bag of chips and a can of soda.
And that's their
something
lunch.
Inexpensive that fills you up for a little while, gets you through, and often unhealthy.
And something that looks cool to peers.
Right.
I mean, that's the heart of this issue is who's cool.
Yeah. Right. And students get bullied around this issue. You know, there's this term free-free, and kids bully other kids, point it out in public. Kids get beaten up. You know, it's a reality. And this is not just in for low-income students in mixed-income schools where people think that's the most apparent place that this would happen.
Right.
This happens in schools with student populations that are very poor. You know, kids make distinctions and I would hazard to guess that some of the kids that are doing the teasing are ones that are eligible.
Of course.
Right. And it's also the stigma, the uncool, then comes to affect the meal itself.
Right.
So that students who are hungry and do choose to eat it are ending up eating a meal instead of one they enjoy and feel good about.
Of course.
One that they feel ashamed of. In L.A., they call it jail food. County food or jail food. I mean, this is a nationwide phenomenon, although it varies from location to location.
So, which leads us to this campaign. So, I mean, Lunch for Learning is a campaign spearheaded by community food advocates, and it really is directed at that stigma. They're clearly, I mean, you've written the book, so I don't need to say it, but for anyone listening, there are other issues that need to be addressed, and that's pretty clear. But why is universal free lunch the primary issue right now? Why is that the first step? And what is Lunch for Learning doing to address the stigma?
So there are many things to take on when it comes to school lunch to truly transform it. But we know that the income stigma is first and foremost. And with the Lunch for Learning campaign, which is a coalition of over 125 organizations and elected officials representing a broad range of interest areas, including educators, education advocates, public health people.
Because educators know that if kids aren't eating, they're not going to learn.
Yes.
Right.
And public health people know that if kids' families don't have access to nutritious food, they do what they can to feed them and fill them up.
Right.
Among many other groups, but as well as the food justice organizations, which
So Lunch for Learning.
So the primary thing is universal free school meals, offering free school meals to all students, taking income out of the picture. The first step in New York City is eliminating the fees that students are charged, because not only are there students that don't eat that are eligible for free meals, but there are many students who are above the $36,000 income cutoff.
So if your family makes
$132 or something,
you are not eligible for it. I mean, that in itself is another reason on top of the stigma for making it free for all the kids.
That's the cutoff for a household of three. So a mom and two kids.
Yes.
And there are many, many, many students in New York City who are above the income cutoff who are in need and who don't have the money to purchase the meal, even though it's a bargain at $175, they don't have $175 in their pocket every day. So it's in addition to removing the stigma, we really want to make this healthy and increasingly appealing, appetizing, well-crafted meal available to all our students.
Well, the more people that are participating and the more families that are participating, it's logical to think that there will be improvements in the appeal and in the food, because there will be more people invested in making it.
Exactly. And because the unit cost of producing a meal goes down as participation rises.
So that's something interesting that I'm not sure that people really understand, and that we could actually spend hours talking about. But basically, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a federal reimbursement if you are eligible by those standards. Mm-hmm. If you're a school food service director and children who are eligible are not taking the lunch, you don't get reimbursed?
Yeah, for sure.
So the more kids that participate in taking that lunch, the more reimbursement we get from the federal government.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, and so that's why what's the cost to the city if Mayor de Blasio does in fact make it free for all of the kids?
So the way it would work is that since school lunch is primarily paid for by the federal government, if we have universal free school lunch, we anticipate over time there'll be a 20% increase in participation.
That's a lot of kids.
Which is 120,000 additional children eating every day. So the city makes up the difference in the cost between the federal and state reimbursement and the cost of providing the meal. So with 120,000 extra students eating every day, it would bring in an additional $59 million in federal and state funds, and it would cost the city an additional $20 million per year.
So, I mean, for the layman here, basically we're making an investment of $20 million and we're getting a return of $59.
Right. But you can't then say, oh, you know, we come out $39 ahead, because we do have to make the investment of the $20, and the $59 gets spent on labor, which is to say new jobs. And I think it's very important to understand that not only are these union jobs, but they're jobs on the school calendar. And that's so important to people who may be trying to be both breadwinner and homemaker, who are raising kids and providing the income.
So I mean, it's such a broad food justice issue, because it hits so many different, you know, pieces of sort of the food justice puzzle. And I like the expression, if you go on the lunchforlearning.org website, there's like a material that says win-win-win. And I love win-win-win. I mean, like I think of a CSA as a win-win-win, you know, there really is no downside. So why is this a win-win-win? Why is Lunch for Learning a win-win-win?
Well, it's a win for students because it eliminates the stigma, takes the stigma out, gets more kids eating. And being more productive in school because they're more focused.
Right.
It's a win for family, so it's actually win-win-win-win. Because
okay, I like another win, right.
They have less paperwork to fill out, and for families who have reservations about filling out the forms, like undocumented parents with children in schools or even other immigrant parents who are hesitant to do that, it's beneficial there.
It's also, it's also beneficial for the families that don't, that aren't eligible,
yes.
Right? So
oh, yeah.
All families yes. benefit from this.
Yep.
Right.
It's
what's the third
it's
win?
Beneficial for the schools in that they have more students eating, and with some of the federal options when they're implemented, it reduces paperwork very significantly, and those resources can be collectively redirected towards educational experiences.
Right.
And the third is that there's a very direct economic impact. So for every 20% increase in participation from of 120,000 students, mm-hmm. there is 1,000 new school food jobs directly within the school system.
So that's amazing in and of
right.
itself, right? And
yeah.
as Jan said, those jobs are on the school calendar, which is critical for, you know, moms especially, right? Because we can't, it's spring break, you know, we have to be at work, there's no one to care for our children, so it makes a lot of sense that you would want to create jobs that are in sync with the kids' calendar.
Yeah.
I think potentially it's a mm-hmm. win for schools and for children in another way, because if the school meal is a regular part of the school day, and you know, it won't happen overnight,
right.
the kids who are high school juniors now are not going to forget everything they've learned about school food being uncool.
Right.
But I started working on this issue in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
So those kids are juniors in high school now. If we had started universal free school meals in 2003, you know,
right.
they over time, kids will come in through pre-K, kindergarten, the elementary school. It'll just be the norm.
Right.
Everyone will eat. This means that you can build curriculum around it.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is more interesting than food?
Right.
What is more interesting than what's for lunch?
Right.
So that I think the potential for a kind of unifying factor in the school setting where now lunch is divisive in many schools.
Right.
Yep.
And for integration with the curriculum. And we all know that kids really need to learn about food because
Absolutely.
Food has become this enormously complex,
right.
you know, system.
It's also, I mean, if you think about it, you know, it's such a beautiful little opportunity here for our new mayor.
Yes.
You know, it's one word away. He doesn't have to get federal or state permission. He can just make it free. And that makes such a difference if you think about, as you were saying, those juniors in high school now, their experience with food, with nutrition, with their, you know, with their experience around community, compared to an incoming class of first graders as early as 2015 could have a completely different mindset. I mean, food access is a completely different issue all of a sudden.
Yes.
And it's one word away, right, Liz?
Yeah.
And so what has to happen?
Well, you know, you also think about Mayor Bloomberg made some enormous changes in New York that have reverberated around the world. Okay, when he eliminated smoking in bars,
mm-hmm.
it became illegal in more. And this could be Mayor de Blasio's contribution to advancing the
yes.
social agenda.
If you're listening,
if
Mayor
New
de Blasio.
York, I believe that if New York does it, it will help to move the agenda nationally.
And we are going to take a break in just 1 minute, but I do want to, I have a favorite Jan Poppendick quote, and it is that this school lunch issue is at once radical and conservative, and there's more to it than that. But I'd love to hear sort of, you know, it's not, I want to be very clear, I think, that this isn't another, you know, let's solve the problem by throwing taxpayer money at it, you know, because I think that unfortunately is the way that some people can frame it. And I'd like to sort of back up from that and explain how this is actually the opposite of that. This is an investment, and this is not a radical idea.
Well, I think it's an investment in the health and learning potential of our kids. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to conservative values in the most fundamental sense. But I think it's also a highly progressive step.
Right.
Because it builds unity. It strengthens the public school system, which heaven knows has been under attack in many ways. And it puts food first. It addresses a fundamental human need that we all share. We all get hungry several
it's
times
Maslow's
a day.
Maslow's like number one or something,
that's
right?
That's right. The foundation right. of that hierarchy of human needs. And it says that these are our children and they're our responsibility and we're going to feed them well as part of the school day and build from there.
Okay.
And this is so consistent with Mayor de Blasio's
absolutely
view of the world and the role of government in eliminating inequities. And, you know, day to day, if a kid is facing this in school, it just, there's no place for that in the public school system.
No.
You know, that the concept of public schools is that they're public. There shouldn't be means-tested pieces that impact directly students' experience.
Agreed. Okay, so we are going to take a short break, and we will be right back with Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org.
So what you wanna do? I'm standing right in front of you like a broken tool. Just tell me what's your name, where you come from, where you go away.
This is Summer Jam by Cookies on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're the most beautiful thing. You're the most beautiful thing that I ever seen.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Hi there, welcome back to Just Food Stories. We're here with Jan Poppendick and Liz Eccles, and we're talking about school lunch, universal free school lunch, healthy and lovely for all public school students in New York City. There was a New York Times editorial in support of the campaign that my two guests have been working on. Jan's been studying school lunch since, how long have you been studying this as a whole?
Well, actually, it goes way back to the mid-1970s when I briefly worked as director of the National School Breakfast Campaign the Food Research and Action Center. So I'm a lifer in this. But school lunch specifically, I started working on it in 2003, right. And Free for All was published in 2010.
So Free for All, for anyone who doesn't know it, is sort of like the book. There are others, and they are wonderful, but this is sort of the book for food studies or students. I am a food studies student, so I don't know about public health, but I would assume public health as well. On sort of the history of the National School Lunch Program, the origins of it, which are fascinating. You know, it is a surplus program and a needs program kind of combined in a weird hodgepodge way, and it's sort of manifested differently over the last almost 70 years. And you, just to give a little background on how I sort of met both of you, I am fortunate to have Professor Marion Nestle as my teacher and mentor. And when I started getting interested in food lunch, school lunch, I asked her sort of, you know, what would be your dream campaign? And she said, well, talk to Jan. So she connected me with Jan, and I said to Jan, what would your dream campaign be? And she said, talk to Liz, because my dream campaign is actually
underway,
which, you know, you don't really hear very often from someone who's been working in this field for a really long time, who's written books, who's written articles, who's sort of, it's actually happening. And so I met Liz, and I'd like to hear a little bit more about, you know, I'd love to hear in the last couple of minutes about what we can do as listeners, as citizens, as New Yorkers. There are a million of our students right now. We can change the lives of, I mean, a million kids, right?
1.1 million, actually.
1.1 million kids. And if you are a parent, or if you are just a New Yorker and you want to be a part of a New York City that values, you know, justice, essentially, right? That you want to have kids in your city grow up and be well nurtured and well educated and healthy. So, Liz, what do we do? What do we do?
Well, there are ways to get involved in the campaign. We welcome different kinds of folks to get involved and bring what they have to the table.
And they go to
Lunch for Learning.
Lunch for, number
with a,
four.
Yeah, right. Lunch with the number four, learning, nyc.org. And you can sign on to be a member of the campaign, and we'll keep you posted and invite you to events and meetings. And most immediately, we are also have a petition online that you can sign on to and circulate to friends, families, colleagues, networks that you belong to.
If you are a social media person and you have Instagram or Twitter, it's at Lunch for Learning NYC.
Yes.
And we have a really groovy Instagram campaign going on right now where we're showing the facts and hopefully getting people talking about this issue and thinking about it. And so, Jan, let's say tomorrow Mayor de Blasio says, thank you, yes, free for all. Yeah. Now what?
Okay. Well, after we have our big party to celebrate. Right.
Exactly. No,
I think that's when the work begins.
Okay.
Because, and I want to speak especially to any teachers or principals who might be listening to this cast, that you need to set the example of valuing food, of valuing eating together, commensality, it's mm-hmm. called, of the shared experience. You need to go down to the cafeteria and eat the school lunch and encourage your students to do the same. You need to begin to work this into your curriculum. And it doesn't just have to be in health courses.
Right.
It can be in literature courses, in writing courses, in science courses. Food is so central to our human experience and existence. So I hope you'll both set a good example and begin to build on the academic possibility. Right. You know, if you're a parent, you need to take a stand that the lunch is free and available and healthy and meets the federal standards, and you're not providing pocket change for the vending machines or the corner store. But I think it's also partly an attitude thing. Mm-hmm. Part of the way that school lunch got its stigma was from adults who didn't think through the implications of their own attitudes.
Right.
So I think we are on the cusp of a new era. As a board member of the Community Food Advocates, I'd like to say you could also send a small donation to Community Food Advocates to help us keep up our good work.
Thank you, Jen.
I think that this is the beginning of a new paradigm, and I like the way that you frame it. You know, there are intentions of all sorts of programs. People have individual intentions, and when you start to see sort of this divide between the intentions and the results get as wide as they've gotten, mm-hmm. it is time for a massive overhaul. And that's where we are right now.
I'd like also to say that as we increase participation in school food, we also increase the possible impact that school food can have on the larger ecosystem of the region.
Absolutely.
So that the more we emphasize local procurement, fresh food, New York City, where there are now 1,300 salad bars in New York City schools. We're on track to have salad bars in all our schools.
Right.
This is an opportunity for fresh regional produce to flow right. into our system and help support our upstate right. farmers.
So universal is the first step,
yep.
and then we can make it delicious and appealing and local and all of the other things that New Yorkers, right. I think, are starting to really want.
Yes. And, some immediate concrete things is, hopefully the mayor will take,
He will.
Do
He'll this. Hear this and then.
And it will be the beginning of a transformation and we'll, there'll be things like implementation and making sure that there are public education and that right. campaigns to draw kids in,
right.
And kind of change the view. And then make sure there are places within the school food system to enable students and parents to impact what food is being served within the guidelines, the federal guidelines.
All right. Well, I thank you both so, so much for being here. I wish we had more time. But that is all the time we have. Thank you so much, Jan Poppendick and Liz Ackles, and of course, Evan DeVito. Woot, woot. For engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Remember, if you have any questions for the program, you can call 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you so much, and thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.